Hungry Root's standard is simple but important. Step one, it's got to taste good. Step two, it's got to be quick to make. And step three, it's got to contain whole, trusted ingredients. And those three sound simple in theory, but when there's the option for takeout and there are stressful work days where meal prep isn't a priority, and when you've got picky eaters in the family, God help us, it's easier said than done. But Hungry Root makes it possible. We just built our first personalized cart after taking the fun little intro quiz, and soon my fridge will be filled with dairy-free snacks and drinks for John and the kids, prepared heat-and-eat meals for the whole family, and other high-quality groceries they're shipping over. I can't wait. Right now, Hungry Root is offering We Can Do Hard Things listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Did they say free veggies for life? Just go to hungryroot.com/hardthings to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/hardthings. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
If you want to learn something new, would you rather learn it on your own, from a random teacher, or from folks who are the best of the best in that skill? I think I know which option most of you would choose. That's made possible by MasterClass. In recent months, they've added classes from the likes of Ava DuVernay, who gives us tips on how to reframe our thinking in all walks of life. One of our personal favorites recently was the one-on-one time we got with Amy Poehler in her class on preparing to be unprepared. So good. With Ava DuVernay. With over 180 world-class instructors and a 30-day money-back guarantee for new members, there's no reason not to get started today. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/hardthings. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/hardthings. masterclass.com/hardthings.
And through the joy and pain that our lives bring, we can do hard.
Hi, sister.
So if that welcome sounded a little bit dramatic and dready, it's because we are going to talk about something pretty serious today. And that topic, I actually haven't even spoken directly to sister about any of this. Abby and I, we have been in light conversation about this situation for the last couple weeks at least. But what we're going to talk about today is something serious and kind of sad, but really important and hard. And that's what we do here, is we talk about things that are important, even when they're hard, or especially when they're hard. So what we're going to do is talk about the fact that over the holidays, I had an eating disorder relapse. And that sounds way too simple for what happened and has been happening, but I only have words to describe things, so I can only use words. So that is what happened over the holidays. And so today I'm going to talk about it here with all of you. And I'm going to just try to use words, which is all I have, to describe what I've been going through for the last bit of time.
Well, before you get into it, tell us how you're feeling right now.
I feel a little bit, I feel nervous to represent things accurately. I feel a big responsibility to speak about something that so many people suffer from. I feel scared because whenever anyone, I don't think it's just in the public, anyone speaks about what the world would consider a failure, it feels like you're making yourself vulnerable to people discounting you. So I feel that that's a risk, but I also feel like a little bit grounded in a way I never feel as grounded on this podcast, because I know how to do this. I know how to like tell the real truth of things, even in scary ways. That's how I've survived. I feel like I know what I'm doing, but I also know that it's risky.
Yeah. Well, it feels like you're just opening yourself up, which I just find so freaking beautiful. And it's just, I can't.
How do you feel? You're nervous. You've been nervous. You've asked me a million times, are you sure you want to do this?
Well,
you're twiddling your thumbs in a way you never do.
I want to protect you. And I also, I think you're perfect. And I know that we are all imperfect. I truly do. And yet I still want to make sure that you understand that, like, no matter what, like, we are ride or die. And this is why, like, this is a reason why I love you, mm-hmm. not something to not love about you. And I think that I find you to be, this isn't courage or bravery. Like, this is just like, this is exactly what I feel like I was made for.
Mm.
Such a time as this. And you are doing great.
And it's, you know, what you said this morning when we were just leaving the bathroom to come down here to do this. And you asked me one more time, are you sure that you want to do this? And I said, one of the reasons is because of my unshakable belief, whether this is true or not, that I'm not about to explain to everybody why I'm fucked up. Like, I really, truly believe that we all have these weird, swirly, dark, maybe spark, whatever, this weird, wild self inside. And that one of my jobs, gifts, whatever, is to just really talk about that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's part of what I'm revealing that is true about all of us, regardless of how it manifests in my life.
And this part feels dramatic. Like, it feels dramatic to say, because it, you know, the whole word relapse is dramatic. But if something is true, it's true all the way through. And if we say we want to show up with our mess and that we're still worthy of love, it's true whether we're talking about our house is a mess, or we're talking about where our insides are a mess, or we're talking about, you know, it's got to be true all the way through. It doesn't make anything about who you've become less valid. It actually proves that you truly believe in what you say, that you're mm-hmm. willing to show up like this. So
I do. I had this feeling this morning of, this is going to sound so weird, this isn't the right word, but pride, or I feel like I have been hiding again, this like part of myself. And I don't feel ashamed of this. I don't feel ashamed of this weird side of myself. Mm-hmm. But I've been, because of the hiding, I have been acting like I do. So in talking about it, I feel like this part of myself is like a friend, and I'm like standing up for her right now. As weird as that sounds. I'm like, no, you can speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? You're allowed to show up at the table. Like, we're not hiding you when the people come visit.
That's right. That's right. Because this part of you that makes your life so hard sometimes is also the part that, in a swirly different way, that people celebrate this weirdness that shows up in different ways. So we don't get to just love her when she's shiny and whatever. Like, we love ourselves even when we're hurting. Mm-hmm. Maybe more importantly then. Right? So that's what we're doing today. And
buckle up, folks.
The why we're doing it is for all of the reasons we just talked about. It's interesting because my friend Nadia Bolz-Weber says we don't write from our wounds, our open wounds, we write from our scars, meaning we wait, right, until pain has turned into wisdom. Because otherwise things just seem like a cry for help instead of an act of service or a piece of art. And I think that all rules, you have to learn them and know them and get them in your bones so that you know when to break them. And you also have to have enough, I guess, success at recovery and humaning behind you so that when you're in the middle of the opened wound, you still have a grounding beneath you. Like, I know how to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm someone who has been to rock bottom a few times in terms of alcoholism, in terms of mental illness, in terms of all of it, eating disorder stuff. And I kind of, although I feel very scared because when you're in the middle of it, you kind of forget that you're going to get out. I can look back on my life and know that I will because I trust myself. So I am speaking from an opened wound, but also one that I've seen scar over so many times that I trust the process enough to speak right now. I'm also with my wife and my sister. I'm with my two people that I trust most in the world. And I'm speaking to this pod squad that I really do trust. I feel safe here in a way I don't feel on social media or whatever. Also, I have been thinking for the last few days about how mental illness is discussed in the world. And it just always feels like it's being discussed by someone who has it all figured out or who is talking about it, but not from it.
Wow.
Which, I don't know. There's something weird about it. And I get it because when someone is in the middle of a low or when someone who struggles with mental illness, you know, I used to use the metaphor of being swallowed by the whale. Like when you're in the whale, you can't really speak clearly. So how are people going to speak from it? Mm-hmm. But it still makes you feel all the time like people are talking at you that don't even understand it. Like it's always like, here's your 10 steps on mental, but it's not, you're not hearing from somebody in it, which is how you feel less alone. And it's like before or after, but not the middle. Like you never hear from the middle. So I think there's something important to speaking in the middle if it's possible. And then the how I'm going to do it is I am going to say whatever I want to say for the next hour. So I'm just going to tell the story of the last month or so with words that are match as closely as possible the experience. I'm not going to worry about sounding crazy or triggering people. What I need you to do, loves, is if eating disorder talk, mental illness talk, all of this sort of traumatic talk is triggering to you, please skip this. Okay? Because I'm not going to worry about it starting in a minute. Okay? So I need you to take care of yourself so that I don't have to take care of you for the next hour. Okay? So does that sound okay?
Sounds wonderful. I mean,
how are you doing, Sissy? Do you feel nervy?
I mean, I feel so many things. I feel curious. I feel sad. I feel proud of you. I feel like unhelpful. I feel that, you know, it's wild because I first learned about this when right after we left from the holiday break and we had just been together for 2 weeks and I felt a little like, oh man, she was going through all of this and I was right there with her, but I was not right there with her at all. And I'm proud of you for doing this and I'm want to support you for the next hour and then all the hours after that.
I love online shopping. It's how I process my feelings. When you combine the convenience of online shopping with prices that allow you to save 50%, sometimes 80%, It's a slam dunk. And that's why I shop on Quince. No more going to a store and being faced with prices that make your jaw drop. Quince has an amazing selection of lush sweaters, silk tops, timeless jewelry, and everything is priced less than similar brands. Plus, it feels good knowing that whatever I order, I've actually ordered the white gold pave diamond hoop earrings that I'm wearing all the time, was made using safe, ethical practices thanks to Quince's partner process. So indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/hardthings for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/hardthings to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/hardthings. Well, what? Okay, so looking back, I feel like, and you please tell me, because I'm not always good at, when I'm in something, I can't always remember what I was like before in any way. But I do know that I remember at the beginning of COVID, which was a strange time for everybody. And for us, it was strange in the way that Untamed was like blowing up and I had 70,000 interviews a day and all of that. I do remember spending a lot of time talking about having untamed myself in many, many ways in terms of sexuality and our family and marriage and gender stuff even. And talking a lot about how frustrated I was that I still have not broken free from compulsive thinking about body and food, mm-hmm. right? So the reason I say that is because when I try to trace back this relapse and I say, oh, it was 2 weeks ago or a month ago, I'm like, well, okay, we can trace the like getting weird, as we call it, like the slow fade into this. I remember feeling compulsive thoughts come back right around a couple years ago. Because we would talk about it too, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you want to know like the logistics of it, it's like you were preparing. So like, lest we forget, you were about to go on a nationwide book tour.
Okay. So it was before then.
And so it was before COVID hit. And oftentimes before you go on the book tour, there's a huge to-do, you know, like your whole team has planned an entire, for a whole year, this book tour. Mm-hmm. You have a whole situation of clothes. And
you're going to be on stage.
You're going to be on stage and you are about to go talk about this art that you've just created. It's now going to go out into the world. So when we talk about getting weird or getting weird again, I just want to talk about all of the context mm-hmm. that was and is a part of those times when you start getting, like we talk weird, but like you start to obsess, I think, a little bit about your body.
Yeah, there's an element of, okay, things are about to be so out of control and I'm going to be so vulnerable because people are going to be staring at me and I'm going to be on stages and I'm going to be talking about this, pouring my heart out. There's a feeling of, what can I do to make myself invulnerable? Mm-hmm. And I think that comes with a lot of like, in my compulsive, twisted thinking, well, I can make myself a like robot in terms of body, face, all of that. Like I can make myself completely unjuicy, unhuman, inhuman. Mm-hmm. Because the way that a woman looks in the world is a vulnerability all the time because anybody can say shit about whatever. And so when you're about to go out into the world and say things that are controversial in themselves, and you know people are going to have a whole shit ton to say about what you're saying and who you are, if you can control one part of it.
Yeah.
They can't say this. They can't say I'm whatever. So controlling your physicality, that's interesting. Yeah, that's true.
And
that
you were
true.
Also about to to deliver this love story. Mm-hmm. So everything that was in the book, I don't know. I just think it's really important in terms of the context of it all. Like you are literally turning your insides out and letting people read mm-hmm. your insides.
Yeah. And when I look back on pictures of then, I was really fucking skinny. Like, it was something when I look back on those pictures. So interesting. Okay. So then that happens. And then the tour gets canceled. And then we're home. And then the pandemic happens, right?
Yep.
So you are right. I was probably already in that way of thinking.
For a few months before the pandemic started.
Yeah. And also I would say for anybody, you know, there's an anxiety controlling. Like if you have some anxiety going into a big thing, working out, sweating, working out, like all of those things are anxiety. You feel like it's going to take the edge off. You just exhaust yourself. You exhaust the anxiety out. So I was probably working out too much. Yeah. So what I know is that at some point, the thinking, the overthinking about food and body just felt like it was getting more and more intense. The next marker I remember is the scale came back. I must have found a scale somewhere in our garage. Yeah. I don't know why it was even still in our house. But that's just like a marker for, you know, the scale came into our bathroom. Over months and months, I just, you know, it was like I'll just weigh myself once a month. Then it was once a week. Then it was once a day. Then it was, you know, most recently it was like 8 times a day. Like every time I went into the bathroom, just like, to give you context, at the one point I remember being like, I'll just do this without my headband on. Like, I'll just weigh myself without my headband. Yeah. Like that kind of level of obsession.
I just want to remind you that at the time too, we were trying to do things to keep ourselves busy during the pandemic. So yeah. I hired a trainer to come and train us on the driveway.
Yeah.
And so this is what I thought, because at the time we were having kind of open conversations about like, you know, I'm starting to obsess, you know, and I'm like, okay, I think that what we should do then is we should work out so that your body is strong, so that you know that your body is strong. But I think that was like gas on
the fire in me.
Yeah.
And I knew that. I mean, I looked at that lady one day and was like, I'm never coming back to this driveway.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like this. Yeah. This isn't the right vibe for me, and didn't come back. So, but that's what happens. You try all these things. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that I did actually throw up a couple of times, or maybe 2 or 3 times over those months. And then the 2 weeks.
Did Abby know about that?
No.
Okay.
No.
You did tell me.
I did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You told me that you were getting weird and like there was just a couple of ice cream incidents.
Milkshake. I did?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Good for me. Well, okay. So that, and then right at Christmas.
This Christmas.
Okay. Yeah. The whole family was here. And I think that, you know, we have had some family stuff come up over the last year. That has been mostly good in terms of like talking about things that our family hasn't talked about, bringing up some old stuff, dynamics in our family that probably for sure originally contributed to an environment that would have been
allowed this
an eating disorder
to flourish.
Right.
Right.
So that stuff has been brought up, but I don't know, you know, people who are listening, when you're dealing with stuff with your family of origin, it's like brought up, and that's an amazing, ridiculously brave step that most people don't do at all, is bring up dynamics that may have been harmful in one way or another, especially in a family so full of love and so full of goodness. It's hard to bring up the stuff that wasn't good enough. But then there's this period where nothing's taken care of really. It's just like this weird time, this weird in between where the elephant in the room has been pointed out, but like it's still there.
No resolution.
Yeah. No one ever talks about that part of the elephant in the room. You're like, but now we just got a fucking elephant in the room. Like
that's how it feels.
Not that helpful. It's not like, well, it should be like, excusing the elephant from the room, but it's not.
Yes.
It's just calling out the elephant in the room, but it's still trampling over all your shit.
I mean, you know, shout out to all the family therapists. Is there, because I feel like that's a part you've missed.
Yeah. How do you resolve like, the problem you've just pointed
there's
out?
There's no elephant removal crew. So then there's the like, you know, the canaries in the coal mine or the whatever, the families who have the elephant pointer outer. But then when you point it out, then you just feel like a jackass because then everybody's like, well, thanks a lot. Yeah. You pointed out the elephant, but now we're all staring at an elephant. So way to go, you know? So anyway, the context is that Christmas happens and all of this is to lead up to the last week of Christmas, the last week of 2021. Is that what it just was? I was throwing up every night, right? So New Year's Day, you guys leave, sister, you and John leave it on New Year's Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you and the kids and John left New Year's Day. Our friends, our dear friends, Katie and Cam, mm-hmm. texted us like a few hours after you left and were like, we're in your town. Can we come say hi? And like literally if there was anyone else, we would have pretended that we couldn't find our phones because we were like de-stressing mm-hmm. and like getting the quiet house back. But it was Katie and Cam. So we were like, get over here. And so I had this moment because at this point, I'm still just keeping this all to myself. Mm-hmm. And that's a tricky place for me because I think I kind of know I'm keeping a secret from myself. And that's my definition of my own sobriety. It's when I'm a break in sobriety is when I am keeping a secret even from myself. Mm-hmm. That's it. But that's even tricky for me because so much of my life, you know, since I was 10 years old was this life. Of like eating and throwing up and whatever. And so it kind of just feels like life to me. I can very much switch back into like, oh, this is just what life is. This is how I can, some people go for walks. Some people go to a therapist.
It's a well-trod.
This is how I deal with myself.
A well-trod path for you. It's
yes.
familiar. Yeah.
It's familiar. Yeah. But so Katie and Cam sat down and everybody, I think somebody said, well, what are your intentions for 2021? You know, they're lesbians. We're lesbians. This is, there's no small talk. We get right into like right. our deepest, right.
And it's 2022, incidentally. There's no demarcation, but intentions for 2022 is what you intended, right?
Is that what I said? Okay.
You said 2021. Right. But it's the groundhog year, so it's fine.
Exactly. And so Abby said something and awesome and Cam said something and they all looked at me and I had nothingness. I had nothing to say. I could not think of one true thing to come out of my mouth. And so I kind of panicked and just said something about work, which is I never, ever. If anybody asks me about like, what is my work is not what I go to, but I had, and so I don't know how to explain why that was such a red flag to me other than, oh, I'm lying to myself. I have nowhere true to start. That blankness, that nothingness, that looking at three people on my couch who I trust, you know, top 10 people in my life, the three of them were on that couch and I had nothing. I had no there anymore. Like, it's the opposite of the there she is moment. It was like, where'd she go? Like, where am I? I have lies blocking any truth. Anything that I could say is bullshit because the truest thing I know is I'm fucked again. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that. Why am I not saying that? Mm-hmm. So since the truest thing I know is that I'm scared because I'm like back in this scary place, then why am I not saying that? I'm not saying that because I am deliberately hiding and that means I'm fucked. Not the fact that I'm throwing up again or whatever. It's the fact that I'm sitting here with these three people that I love and know and trust, and I'm not saying to them what my thing is.
Mm-hmm. I get that completely because it's the verification. It's like we live so much in this conflict within ourselves of like, what is true? What is not true? What is the inside of me? What is the outside of me? There's never any black and white in like what I'm, what is a lie between what I'm presenting to the world and what is my internal reality. It's such a gray swamp of what is real and what isn't. But then when you know what is in those rare, rare moments like that, where you know what is true and you know what's most important and you know what is clear, but you're not saying it, that is the explosion where you're like, oh, we're in the deep now.
Yes.
This is.
Yes. Yeah.
I remember being on the couch looking at you like, wow.
Really?
She couldn't come up with a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if you said, you were like, I don't know.
I couldn't do it. I could not conjure up anything.
Yeah. That has never happened before.
Right.
You know, we talk a lot when you
gone
talk.
Is
yeah.
gone.
Yeah.
You're gone because you weren't bringing you. That's why you were gone.
Yes.
It's not that you couldn't access it. It's because you weren't ready to bring it forward.
Yes, that is why at the beginning of this, when I was saying there was a level of like pride isn't the right word, but maybe it's relief that I'm talking today is like,
yeah,
it's the opposite of that moment on the couch. Like, yeah. I don't care. Fine. Say I'm crazy. Say I failed. Say I'm relapsed. Say I'm whatever. But I'm still here. Whoever that I is still here and is going to speak.
If you go way back in the archives to episode 82, to be exact, we spoke to Hannah Gadsby about how to communicate better. And if we have to work on communicating better in our own language, it's understandable that learning a new language is intimidating. But don't be intimidated. Rosetta Stone is here to help you make quick progress on this journey. And with 25 languages offered, it's no wonder they are and have been the most trusted language learning expert for 30 years. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, We Can Do Hard Things listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/wecan. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/wecan today.
So Katie and Cam left. I didn't say anything for the rest of the day. And then, I don't know if you remember this, and I'm not going to use any names, but the next morning, you had a friend call you who was in their second day of sobriety. And the truth is that I sat there, you were on like speakerphone or something, and I sat there listening to a very early in sobriety person say all the very early in sobriety stuff with all the like hubris of early sobriety and all the like beauty and like things you can hear them say that they're going to crash and burn about. And like I don't know. I actually found myself feeling a little bit judgy and annoyed by myself doing the dishes, listening, like listening to this beautiful human who has just reached out to Abby, who is in their second day of sobriety, and feeling judgy. And, ugh.
Like jaded?
Jaded.
Mm-hmm.
And they hung up and I put one more glass in the dishwasher and was like, I'm fucked. I think those are my words. Babe, I'm fucked.
You actually said, I was going to wait until, because the kids were still with us. They were going Craig's house that afternoon. You said, I was going to wait until the kids went to Craig's, but I'm fucked. I was like,
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just told me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I told you, and then you were completely amazing.
I was.
Yes. Oh. Because you were undramatic. You were unshocked. You were soft and loving and huggy. And there was no flick of terror. There was no, you're not who you said you were in your face. It was just like, of course. And now we will get through this. So you were amazing. And then we had told the kids we were going to go for a hike that day.
Yeah.
So here is where I try to explain this thing about food and body and eating disorders and mental health and mental illness. So I have always felt like, you know, what there's all these science words and there's depression and there's anxiety and there's eating disorders and there's mental illness and all this thing. But like the way it manifests inside of me at times is like there is this black hole or like a canyon of murkiness that exists inside of me. And I could jump in. Okay. But like my job is to stay on the land side of this manhole or canyon of swirly dark energy. But there is something seductive about the canyon. It's not all terror and, you know, weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's like a little bit purple and swirly and sparkly too. So it's like,
it's like Vegas.
It's not like Vegas at all.
Okay, but Vegas may well be Abby's canyon. So let's just table that for a second. That's another episode, Abby.
That's right.
It's like the opposite because Vegas is all like lights and man-made and bullshit. This is like spiritual in a weird way. Okay. I don't know. It's not,
That's the seductive part. Maybe.
It might be the internal tendency to glorify this thing.
Yeah. Right. I was going to say your story about it is right. That it is spiritual.
Right.
Whether okay. That may be true, it may yeah. Not be true, but in your story, when you look at the canyon, it is in seductive my image of it. Because it is maybe a higher or deeper reality than the actual tangible reality of the shore.
It could be, yes, that, but also it's because it is so hard and it requires so much work to stay on the land.
Yes. It's not it's being because, the land is part of its seduction.
Exactly. It represents not having to work so damn hard, like mm-hmm. a succumbing. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to say is that when eating food, body stuff, is my way of getting closer to the canyon, it has nothing fucking to do with eating and food, okay? Mm-hmm. It's like my friends who are cutters or my friends who, all of the different things, those are their ways of inching closer to the canyon. It has nothing fucking to do with the eating. So when I get weird about eating and food and it's like, oh, we'll get a personal trainer, or it's like, well, let's talk about nutrition. It's like the equivalent of saying, okay, I have once again set myself on fire, and someone saying, well, what we can do to explore that is let's just sit down and talk about pyrotechnics.
Yeah. Do you, yeah. Have you taken a fire prevention
fire safety
course?
Class.
Yeah. Like, it's like, not, no, that's elementary.
It's like,
baby.
No. Yeah. Like we want to know like why cosmically am I an arsonist? Yeah. Not like how fire works.
Right.
Okay. I'm talking about the canyon of swirly dark. I'm not talking about freaking nutrition. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have to go hiking and I actually decide we're going to do that. Like there's no point in, we're going to continue what could be better than going on an easy hike with the family and staying in the light and being outside and all the things.
I wasn't so sure. I think that you had to convince me that that was,
that was going to be okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like,
so we scared. Go and we're just going to this like place that's 25 minutes away or whatever. Mm-hmm. And on the car ride there, it was just so interesting because first of all, I was in a bit of trauma because I had just told you, it's like to take yourself out of the secret place to where someone can see it in the light. It's like, there's no turning back. Now mm-hmm. it's real. It doesn't always feel like it's real when it's inside of you, even though it's happening and you can see yourself throwing up. It's mm-hmm. like, it could still be not real. Mm-hmm. So I'm in a bit of trauma. I think the best way that I can describe this part is that this is when I really feel crazy, whatever that means. So we're driving there. I notice that my breathing is so shallow. I can't take a deep breath. I'm sitting there in the passenger seat. Abby's driving. The kids are in the back. I think we had the dogs with us. It was just like utter chaos, like everybody, happy chaos. And I can't catch a breath. And I realize it's like, I'm being as still as humanly possible and not breathing deeply. And it's so interesting because it is the same way of being that you would be if you were hiding because there was like a killer in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're like trying not to be found. It's like being paralyzed, being not being able to breathe because there's a stalker. And then you're thinking hard about why you're behaving that way. And then you realize, oh, no. The stalker for you, honey, has always been inside of you. Mm-hmm. Like the call
is coming from inside the house.
Yes. So this is what I'm thinking about. And then I realize, I look around and I think everyone's listening to like Taylor Swift or something. Like the cognitive dissonance between what's going on inside of me and what's going on outside of me is so, it's like all light and happiness on the outside and the inside is like this swirly thing. And I realize that I am holding so tightly to my arm that like, I mean, for sure I'm bruising myself. I'm holding so tightly.
You do have a grip. Like that's just like a general state.
Koala bear grip.
Like sometimes we'll just be holding hands watching TV and I have to actually like move my hand like because she's now completed and gotten the grip into a vice grip and
yes.
my circulation is being cut off. Like you have a tendency to just do it.
Would you say that not sometimes, but every time?
Every time.
Every time. Every yeah. time we're holding hands, you have to.
I have to like kind of wiggle yeah. and you have to say sorry.
Sorry. Yeah.
You don't have to, but that's
what I have a question yes, about that cognitive dissonance. So you for the week prior when you were actively purging, you did not feel that cognitive dissonance because only after you had told Abby you had that cognitive dissonance? Because theoretically, you could have had that the whole time that you were knew this was happening and the world was just unfolding around you obliviously. But it's only after you told Abby that you had that?
I think it's phases.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like...
It's real now.
It's real now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No turning back. No turning back.
No take backs. No take backs.
No take backs.
We're here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that I'm holding myself so tight. And I remember looking around and they were all dancing. They were all dancing and singing. And and I'm looking at their hands are all flailing around. And my thought was, it is so beautiful how much they trust gravity. And then I was like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, what? Why don't you trust? Like, I'm holding on in the car. Like, I am holding so tightly so that I do not fly away. And these fools are just, it is as if gravity is real to them. Mm-hmm. They do not even have to hold themselves down or in or together.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you what my thoughts were at that time. Right now, sitting here on this couch, I understand how batshit crazy that sounds. But in the moment, I was like, wow, look at this magic trick they're all doing. They're all just so loose. So we get to this hike. We're walking. It's really, really beautiful. And we're in Palos Verdes, okay? And we're going around this cliff. And we come across.
Oh my God.
This staircase. Okay. Do you remember?
I now understand what you're.
Do you understand now what was happening to me during that time? Do you remember how I stopped at that staircase and stared for so long and then walked down it, which I never do? I'm like the least adventurous person in the world.
No, I was like, is she nervous? Because Chase had walked down there. I was like, is she nervous that Chase is going to fall? Like, why is she going down there? That's so weird.
No, the second I get out of the car to go to a hike, all I'm thinking is like, how long will it be till we get back in this car? Mm-hmm. Like, if I don't trust gravity in the car, I'm sure as hell not going to trust it on a cliff. It's all very precarious. So we're on this cliff overlooking the ocean, and there's this staircase, and it's wild. It's the longest staircase in the world. It goes from the top of this cliff, and it's
not
cut
really
in,
but it looks like it. Yes.
Right, it looks like it, and it like somehow goes all the way down to the water, but you can only see the top half of it. You can't see the bottom half of it. So, and then halfway down, the whole top of the staircase is in the light. You can see it. And then there's this platform, this like bigger part of the staircase. And then that's all you can see. So I was like, okay, I have to walk down and get down to that platform. So I walk down the staircase and there's that platform, and then the staircase turns, and then the rest is just all down to the ocean, and it's all dark. It's out of the sun. So that's when I walk back up to the top so I can see the whole thing, right? And I realize that platform, which I had to Google because I could not freaking think of what that was actually called in a staircase. It's called the landing.
I was going to say a landing.
Landing. The landing is where I was that day.
Yes, I feel that. Yes, yes, yes.
The landing is where I still am today.
Yes.
Weeks later. Okay. But here's what I'm saying. The landing is where you stand and you can go either way. Mm-hmm. You look down, and the down is so seductive because it's easier. And it looks like it'll take less effort, and it's in the dark. You can get lost in it. Nobody can see you. You can just keep descending one step at a time. Or you turn and you look up at that motherfucking staircase again, right? Just like one step at a time, and you think about your freaking poor little legs who have done this so many times, and you think about like the sun that's so freaking bright and like everyone can see your struggle and it just looks so steep. And so for a minute, you just stay on the landing. And so that's where I am right now. I'm on the landing. And I only know, which I'm really delighted about, that I'm not going down. I'm not.
How do you know that?
Because I know myself, and I know what I know about myself is that once I get to the landing, I will not go further. I trust myself completely to not descend further when I know where I am. I trust my weary little legs. I trust the light. So I trust the climb.
When you were throwing up, were you below the landing in the darkness or on the landing? I feel confused.
Walking down, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think this is where metaphor kind of breaks down a bit, babe. I don't know exactly where I was staircase.
No, listen, I just want to know because this is, as a partner, this is important knowledge.
Like, I mean, the landing is day zero. Like the landing is when you look at yourself and there are no lies between you and you anymore.
Got it.
right? The land doesn't feel like a staircase until the landing. It feels like a free fall of nothingness. It doesn't feel, you're not deliberately stepping down and down and down. It only feels like the staircase. That staircase wouldn't have made any sense to me the day before.
I see.
You have to be on the landing to recognize the landing.
It's like an acknowledgement of acknowledging it actually forms this staircase.
Yeah.
It's like a forming of it. That's really interesting.
I mean, a landing is a platform that allows you to change directions or allows a climber to rest. So there's a graciousness of the landing too. There's enough space to rest, right? To like gather your strength up for the climb again.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's where I am now. I'm on the landing. And what that means to me in practical terms is that there will be a next. There will be a climb. There will be, it will probably include therapy and all kinds of different things. But I will say that I have a confidence about me this time. Like I really do. I think the climb will be different. It will feel different. But I'm 45 years old and I know myself and I trust myself. And I also have been through this enough times to have a level of curiosity, because I think what was annoying me about that conversation you were having with that person in their second day of sobriety was that that person sounded the opposite of jaded. There is an awe, a beginner's mind that returns to you when you realize that we're all on the fucking landing all the time. There is a returning of awe when you start that first step that feels a little bit magical, that isn't as present when you're feeling really big and bad about yourself because you're on step 409,000.
Mm-hmm.
I have a positive anticipation about the magic that will come as the climb begins again. And I'm just being super tender and careful and gentle with myself as I wait on the landing. And that is what I wanted to say today.
Soda is delicious. Let's get that out of the way. Lemon lime, root beer, cherry cola. These are flavors that remind us of summer, of fun family days, of nostalgic moments in our lives. But it's soda, which naturally comes with its downside. Unless, of course, you reach for Olipop. Olipop uses functional ingredients with much less sugar than conventional sodas. And their flavors are still delicious and versatile. Orange squeeze to complement your burger. Classic root beer for those who like a heartier taste. And a brand new lemon lime variety for those who seek out some citrusy tang. Long story short, Olipop is a great way to indulge in a delicious drink and bring back some of those nostalgic flavors from your childhood. I love Olipop. Olipop is sold online at drinkolipop.com or Amazon and available in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide, including Walmart, Target, Kroger, Whole Foods, and more. Plus, when you use code HARDTHINGS on their website, you can get 20% off your order. That's drinkolipop.com, code HARDTHINGS.
And so, with that, I just want to say directly to you, sweet listener, it is true that we can do hard things and we will keep doing them together. See you back here in 2 days with more love notes from the landing. Bye. I give you Tish Melton and Brandi Carlile.
I walked through fire, I came out the other side. I chased desire, I made sure I got what's mine. And I continue to believe that I'm the one for me. And because I'm mine, I walk the line. 'Cause we're adventurers and heartbreaks on map, a final destination.
Things is produced in partnership with Cadence 13 Studios. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really liked it. If you didn't, don't worry about it. It's fine.
I am an outdoors person. I'm a big fan of places that are rich in culture, history, and art. And most importantly, I'm a former resident of the great state of Oregon, which is why I want to tell you about Travel Oregon. When you find a guide through Travel Oregon, you'll be able to leave the planning to the local guides and experts, and this is a game changer. Instead of trying to find a good hiking trail and hope for the best, you can get a tour guide to bring you to the must-see spots, ensure you're provided with all the necessary safety gear, and show you all the amazing little nuggets you might miss on your own. And because the guides and tour companies are small businesses, they're led by incredibly passionate people. You can find experts who speak multiple languages and know about a variety of cuisines. Or if you want a biking tour, you can find local guides to help you to customize your tour. There's so much to explore. Learn more at traveloregon.com.